But the idea of seeking gold, like the average youngster, I had just gotten out of the Marine Corps, and I heard that the Russians would let you mine gold, but they wouldn't let you take it out. That was, we read stories in the paper on that every day. So I decided I was going to go up, go to Alaska and outfox them.
Well, where were you living then?
I was in Seattle then, at the time, and I just figured I was going to go up there and outfox them, get them, mine gold, even though I'd never seen gold. Just shows you some of the wild ideas you get when you're a youngster.
Were you born in Seattle?
No, I was born in New York City.
When were, do you mind telling me when you were born?
July 12th, 1896. That's a long time ago.
July 12th, 1896.
Yeah.
In New York City.
Yeah, and incidentally, the there's an article in Last Reader's Digest saying something about the wildest street in New York City. And that was the street that I was...
That's the street where you live. Yeah. It got wild after you left.
Well, yes, it got more of the poor Puerto Ricans started moving in, and then along that with the colored section started getting...
Your brother, Dave Adler,
yeah,
he was also born in New York.
Yeah, oh, yes. City.
Do you recall his birthday?
No, Dave was a couple of years older than I. But after I came up here, I knew he wasn't happy there, because he was, I don't know, he thought differently than the average kid on the East Side. And I could tell that he wanted to get away from there. Mm-hmm. I wanted to come on up. So he came up. Happily.
Well, you got to Seattle then. How old were you when you were in Seattle, when you were reading about all this gold up here in Alaska?
Well, I read that I wouldn't know. It was after the war, after 1918.
After World War One.
Yeah. I was playing in New York, and happened to got disgusted with New York and went with the carnival. I'd played with some pretty big spots in New York, like the I followed Paul Whiteman in the Pally Royal in New York, and played with some big bands. I was studying for concert piano before the war. And funny thing, this teacher of mine was a student of Liszt, and a very delightful old fellow. And he told me that if you go to war, I'll never talk to you again. And after the war, I came to his home, wanted to get in, knocked at the door, and the maid told me that he wasn't home. Oh, I just figured I'd come back, and I came back a week or so later. And she told me that Mr. Lachman, which was his name, told me to tell you he is not at home. So I knew I was getting the gate.
So he kept
working. Never did speak to him, and I just loved the old man. Mm-hmm. Was it
a patriotic thing on his part? Was he German?
No, he just felt that, he said, you're studying for... concert career. He says, wait till the fellas on the street corner go. He says, why should you go? And these fellas on the street corner, says, bums there, standing around and
doing nothing,
and you give up your career to go.
Well, you were in the Marine Corps then, World War.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Then you, after you were discharged, then you said you played with different bands.
And then I played, and then I decided I wanted to see the country. I went with a carnival, and hop heads, you know. I'd sit down on my bunk, and there'd be a couple of fellas up in the upper bunk, saying, "I wonder how deep this ocean is," and they would dive down to the floor. I don't know how they broke their heads and broke their neck. I don't know.
The phone is for you.
Me?
Anyway, you traveled with the carnival and then ended up in Seattle.
Yeah. And then I start reading that fancy stuff about
Alaska.
About Alaska and the gold. So I decided to. I knew some fellow who. He was a saxophone player. And he's good, I'll go. He had been up here before. And so we bought a pack and away we went. Steerage. No money. And you know, things, I got to Cordoba. And in Cordoba, Cap Lathrop had a theater there, and underneath the theater he had a cabaret. Mm-hmm. And I went down there and listened to him, and at that time I could play a lot of piano at that time. Not bagging, it's just, I could played much better in those days. And so I thought I'd like to get a job. I spoke to the manager, and the manager says you have to go to Anchorage and see Cap Lathrop. And so I went up there, steerage, saw Cap, asked him for a job. I can remember walking along the street in Anchorage and asking for a job. I said, let's walk into one of these places here. Let me play for you. Let me give you an idea what I can do. He's a young man. There's no use of you trying out for me. I've got the best men in the country working for me. And that made me mad. So I went back to Cordoba. And the Odd Fellows had a little hall on the second floor of some building there. And I rented that. And 2 weeks later, Cap had to close his place down because nobody would go there. They all came to our place. And that's about the first time Cap had been licked. And he didn't like that.
Yeah, I'll bet he didn't.
And he sent word up here that when he found out that I was going towards Fairbanks, he sent word all along the line that I was not to get work.
Is that right?
Yeah. And when I got to Fairbanks, I couldn't get a job cleaning the streets. Nobody would give me a job. But you know, going along, coming up here, I went by the way of Chitnaw.
From Cordoba.
We went to Chitnaw, and then we just walked up the highway.
You walked to Fairbanks.
Oh yes. And roads, you know, just.
Just the trail.
Just trails.
Well, was this the same partner with you?
Yeah.
Who came from Seattle with you?
Yeah. And we camped out, and of course I had never seen any wild animal outside of a zoo, so I was scared 99.5% of the time. Every sound I heard at night was a wild bear or something. But at that time they had the Alaska Communication Service, so they were always wired ahead of who was coming. Never forget, we got to Copper Center. And as we came and walked along the road, I came to this roadhouse. This woman comes out and she lets out a streak of cussing. It's about time you got here. She says, we've passed word around all over the countryside that we're going to have a dance. We heard you were coming. You see, the Alaska Communications always wired ahead.
I see.
So
they knew you were walking.
Yeah, so they had a dance scheduled in the roadhouse, and
they were just waiting for you.
Yeah, and these miners had come from miles, you know, to. So boy, I never will forget that, and they didn't applaud. That was my first.
Hi, you don't.
To go back to Cordoba for just a minute, What year was that you arrived in Cordoba? It was after World War I.
23.
1923.
Yeah, because 23 I came up to Fairbanks.
So you played there in Cordoba until you decided to come up this
way? Well, I just stayed there, just enough, because I wanted to go. My ambition was to get up to Siberia.
Oh, to Siberia?
Oh, yes. I was going to Russia. I wasn't going to North
Dakota. Oh, I see.
I was going to mine gold and
in Russia
and get it out, where the Russians said, where the papers said the Russians wouldn't let you take it out. That's where I was headed.
I see.
But then I remember when I got to Fairbanks, couldn't get a job. Nobody would hire me. And I went down to the theater there and spoke to the manager, and he said, "I'm sorry." He said, "That's my orders." He said, "The old man, if I hire you, I get fired." And so I used to, I remember rabbits was breakfast, dinner, and supper, and in between time. We'd go out at night, the rabbit, if you have a flashlight and you put a flashlight on him, I don't know whether it'll blind them or whether it'll
hypnotize them
some way, then I can take a shot at them. So that's where we ate.
What was your partner's name?
Clyde Eyrig.
Clyde Eyrig?
Eyrig, I-H-R-I-G.
I-H-R-I-G.
And we got to, then after we were living here like that, of course, we got. I made a few dollars on the side. They had a row here, Fourth Avenue,
mm-hmm.
And the girls knew that I played, and they sent word find out if I would mind coming over some night if they had a live one, if I would play for them. I was just, heck, I don't mind making a dollar.
Getting tired of rabbits.
Sure. And 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning, somebody come over. Come on over, Mary Jones or Mary. She has got a live one. She wants you to play. So I'd go over there and play, and some old timer, some drunk would want, when you and I were young, Maggie, something like that, and I'd play for about 49 times. And he'd start bawling, and you know, like they do. And
sentimental.
And she'd say, "All right, now pay the man. What do you think? He got out of bed this time of the night for nothing." And then I'd get a little silver dollars. And now going back to Copper Center. That's where I learned about no applause. If they wanted an encore, they didn't applaud, they just threw silver dollars. Well, towards the piano where we were playing, and that meant they wanted more.
Keep
yeah,
going.
They'd say more, and they just, but they wouldn't.
Yeah.
No applause at all.
Yeah. So you made a few bucks in Copper Center.
Oh yeah, they were nice there. They threw a couple of dollars over there.
Well, that big dance. Did you just play for the one dance, or did you stay over?
Just that one time that we were on our way.
Yeah.
We got free room and board that night, and they were all happy. And then we kept on going until we got into, as I say, into Fairbanks. And then one night, the piano player at the theater got sick. And Oscar Webber, that's silent movies in those days, and Oscar Webber came over to where we were staying, and he says, "Don, will you help me out in a pinch? My piano player is sick." And I said, "Sure, Oscar, I don't mind. Just because the old man hates my guts, if I can make a couple of bucks, I'm all set." He's all right. He's taking the chance, but I've got to have music. I can't have a silent picture without music. So I went down there and played that night. And of all things, Cap Lathrop came in town that night. Can you imagine storybook form? And the rest of it I got from Oscar Webber, who was the manager. And he says, the old man came in, and he says he stood back in the back of the theater, and he was watching the picture, and then he He asked me, who's that playing down there? And Oscar says, I told him that that's the man you told me not to hire, but he said, I had to have somebody. He says, well, Cap says, well, maybe we better hire him. So that's where I got my first job with Cap, and I wound up vice president of the company.
Is that right? Did you become friends then?
Oh, yeah, we were all right. I was right-hand man for quite a while, and I say that. When I left, finally left there, I was vice president of the Latham Company. Mm-hmm. But when I worked for him, the coal bunkers. My first job in the morning was to go open the coal bunkers at about 8 o'clock. Pat Patton was my assistant. I'd open the coal bunkers, and then from there I'd go over. We had the apartment house.
With the Lathrop building?
Lathrop building. And I have to check that through and work around there. And then I go over to the theater and check that through, clean up what the janitor missed, as rule, you know. And then the news miner would need a little news. I'd go out and report news.
Well, all this time you were playing piano for the movies, too.
That at night. I was playing at the theater.
So you played at night, but you were doing all the
chores during the day. This was the day job. This is my day for the same company.
And you even gathered news for the news miner.
Yeah, and then they'd say, we need a couple of galleys, a type. So I'd go and set up a couple of galleys of type.
On a typesetter.
Yeah. You see, on their line of type, I got my experience with that with old W.F. Thompson, who was the first, as you know, the first man. And he was a great guy.
Yeah.
He
some great stories about him.
Oh, his headlines was.
My husband tells a story about one that when they had a fire or a fire scare at the Nordale, and somebody jumped out of the second floor window with this rope. You know, they had ropes in the second floor windows, the third floor windows in Nordale that you could use to climb down.
Uh-huh.
This fellow grabbed a hold of the rope and jumped. And of course, he hit the ground and was killed.
Oh, he jumped with the rope in his hand.
Yeah. He was panicked.
Yeah.
He panicked. And he jumped. And he broke his neck or something and was killed. And my husband Jim said that the headline was, I don't know the man's name, but jerked to Jesus.
Jumped to Jesus.
Jerked to Jesus.
That's where his headlines were.
Yeah.
They were masterpieces. And of course, he was not polite, but he was tight half the time, you know. And every night when I go to work, see, I'd always have about a 5 or 10 minute concert at the theater before the show. Then I'd have to play the show. Then after the show, I had a column for the
News Miner.
Yeah, Hollywood, Fairbanks to Hollywood. Hollywood to Fairbanks that I ran every day. And I'd write that. And then from there, I'd go over to the News Miner and set type so they'd have some galleys for the morning. Mm-hmm. And I'd always told note on the machine, Don, don't forget the bottle. And I'd go over to the liquor store, get a bottle, and leave it in his office the next morning.
Is that? You had all kinds of chores.
And then I'd get through there about 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, and then I'd go home, and 8 o'clock in the morning, I'd start all over again.
Well, you were putting in about 20-hour days then.
Sure. 7 days a week.
Cap Lathrop was getting his money out of you in those days.
Yeah, 7 days a week. And the only vacation I got the old man in all the 20 years or so that I was with him was the week we were, moms came up and we were married.
And what's your wife's maiden name?
Myrtle Olson.
Is she from Seattle?
Yes.
Don't forget, you met me on the boat.
Oh yeah, that's sort of interesting. Moms was a terrific saxophone player. Now this is not showing partiality. I knew the best of them in those days because I had played with some of the best bands in New York. And, Mom, who was the fellow that said, is everybody happy?
Oh, yeah.
Remember that clarinet player? Is everybody happy? That was his... Who?
Not Al Jolson.
No, I met him in the service. There's some interesting yarns about those fellas. But, he wanted me to be his piano player and his arranger. I never will forget that. And I turned it down.
Mm-hmm.
That shows you how mistakes you make, you know? And even the fellow that wrote, Johnny Black, the fellow who wrote Dardanella, remember one of the nice spots where I was playing, and he brought the manuscript over. And, I said, what do you think of it? Not, I said, fine, but the introduction is, nobody be able to play it, and da-da-da, you know,
yeah.
A tricky left hand, and I figured it wouldn't sell. But it turns out to be a bestseller. And did you ever hear the Naughty Waltz?
The Naughty Waltz?
The Naughty Waltz. That was a quite very popular song years ago.
I don't recall it.
Oh, and... And I used to play on the boats. I got a job on the boats through that naughty, not through the Naughty Waltz, but some other fella came in one night with his girlfriend, and it was a night spot where you had to dress up. And this fella came over to the piano and requested a number. and I told him that, sure, I'd be glad to play it for you. And... Then I walked over to his table later on and said, if you have any requests, you know, I just figured here's some poor guy, got all his money saved up for the week and taking his girl out, you know, so I was going to show him a good time. I said, if you've got any requests, just ask. I'll be glad to play it for you. And, I played a couple of other requests, and he left the card and just said, so-and-so, some steamship company, I don't know. And a steamship stock broker. But anyway, I went down, I thought I'd just get down to his office, and I went down to his office one time, and I had to pass about 5 secretaries to get there, so I thought to myself, where am I going? And finally I got to him, and he said, gee, it's awfully nice of you to come and visit me. Mm-hmm. He said, you know, you were awfully nice to me the time I was out to your place. He said, I'd like to do something for you. What would you like to do? I said, well, I'm happy what I'm doing. And I've always had an ambition sometime to play on the boats. You'd like to play on the ocean liners? And he goes to the phone, calls up a couple of fellas, and the first thing you know, I hear him say, well, I've got the man I'd like to see put in that place. And I became the official musical director of the United States Lion.
Is that right?
Just like that. Just from playing for him that night, his request.
Well, where was this when you played for him?
Some song.
Yeah, where? In
Shandy's, yeah, in New York. No,
in New York.
Oh, yeah, this is back in New York. And so I was chief musical director of the U.S. Steamship Lines. Hire orchestras and play it, go across, make trips with them. And
this was before you headed for Russia.
Yeah. Yeah, this is my...
And that's where you met your wife.
No, then when I got to Seattle, I was going... No, I met Mom's after I was up here a few years, and I was going out on a... I had just gotten a hernia operation, and I was going out to see my folks. That was a vacation.
That was your one vacation.
That was the one vacation, getting
a hernia.
Hernia operation. So on the way back, Mom was playing a sax on the boat. She was with the, and like I told you before, I had heard the best of the saxophone players, and she got a beautiful tone. She got more out of that sex than I could ever hope to get out of the piano. And produced. Our courtship was from the boat to Seward.
Don't forget Teddy's listening, so be careful.
To what?
She said, don't forget Teddy's listening, so be careful.
Oh. And
that was on Alaska Steamship?
Yeah. Uh-huh. And then after I got up here, I wrote, after I got back here, we caught it through the mails. And then after we got up here, the first time I kissed her was when she got off the train at college.
She doesn't want you to tell that part of it. Did she have her saxophone with her?
Oh yeah.
When were you married?
But here.
Here in Fairbanks.
Night after the show. Couldn't hold the show up.
Yeah.
After the show at night.
Well, that's enough for that now.
We had the ballroom at the top of the theater. Empress in those days.
Yeah.
And then we'll forget.
Was that the Empress Theater?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we had the ballroom. And I had made my own recording that afternoon for Wedding March. And I made a whole bunch of records and see which one if I didn't like them, why I just filled the rest of the record with anything. And finally I had one that I liked, so I put it on. And I told the fellow who was working the phonograph, I said, now, I'll give you, the minute the wedding march is over, yank it off because there might be some other stuff on there. And we played the wedding march, and the minute it starts saying, we are gotten together.
We've gathered here.
And then out of this starts Platinum St. Louis Blues. That I had, you know, played for just to fill up the rest of the record.
He didn't take the needle off the phonograph?
No, see, we've got together here for the St. Louis Blues. I waved him down and then finally took it off.
When was, when were you married? What year?
I don't know, that was about 5 years ago.
That was shortly. Well, when you came up here, you said that you couldn't get a job for a long, long time. Was that the first winter or first one year? Or
mm-hmm.
Was it
about a year?
And then the man who blackballed you ended up hiring you, and you became vice president of his company. And were you here in Fairbanks all that time, or in Anchorage, or?
Oh, here.
Here in Fairbanks.
Yeah, as I say, I had those various things to take care of.
Mm-hmm.
And but no vacation. And then they came to trouble with the war. They expect the trouble with the Japs and organized National Guard of Alaska. And they wanted someone up here. And they had one man, I don't know whether he just couldn't handle it or what, they asked me to take it over, and I took it over. And
was that for the entire state or just for the area?
No, for this area.
Now at the mug-up Saturday night, Earl Beisline asked the people there, the audience, what the date November 15th, 1941 signified. There were two or three stood up. And Joe Kelly was one.
Well, he was one of my men. Earl Beisline, Earl
Beisline
was one of my officers.
There was a Marlin. Was that Harley Marlin?
Harley Marlin, I think,
and
yeah.
Joe Kelly and Earl Beisline that night.
Yeah, there was, and then there was two or three others that came over that
remembered that.
Yeah, and
but that date signified the organization of your National Guard unit?
Yeah. Because December 1st, the war was declared.
The Marlin that was in the sitting with the officers yesterday wasn't Harvey. That's Howard, isn't it?
Was Howard yesterday?
Yes.
I think we were talking about
the
mug-up.
Harvey, that's his brother.
Yeah.
I didn't see him at the mug-up.
There was a Marlin who stood up when Earl Beislein asked the significance of that date.
I didn't see him. It was farther away.
He was way in the back.
Yeah. That might have been Harvey, but this was Howard yesterday.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There was four or five of them there.
So you were placed in charge of the National Guard unit. What would they call a unit here? A battalion or?
We had a company. Company C, 297th Infantry.
Company C, 297th Infantry. And was this part of what they called the Alaska Scouts?
Mm-hmm. And,
I'm gonna quick change the tape because it's running out. I want to get a little bit on that Alaska Scouts. Joe Kelly, I
first. Well, on the Alaska Scouts, I didn't go with them. I stayed here.
You went to Anchorage.
I went, yeah. But they that group went down to Illusions at first.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to, sent to Cordova, to Anchorage. And then Anchorage, I went down to Annette Island. Annette Island there, I made commanding officer of the post. And from there I went to, I was major then, by that time, and I'd gone up to, then they sent us up out the Aleutians.
Well, in Anchorage, you flew around with Bob Hope,
didn't you? You were there. Oh, yeah. Went around with Bob.
Bob Hope? It's
Bob Hope, surface officer mm-hmm. for a while. And, this is interesting. This is what Bob gave us. Look at the writing in the back of the watch. He gave us a party. Moms couldn't make it, so I didn't go, but he sent the watch over anyway.
Is that right? To Don Adler, thanks for the memories. Bob Hope and Francis Langford. Well, all we got.
That makes a nice.
Isn't that nice? That's a great souvenir.
Yeah.
I think he gave it to Teddy.
That's his, huh?
Oh. He gave it to Teddy.
Yeah, that's his. But
you traveled with them on an entertainment tour.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I also through that period of time when I was service officer, I met who was the one you said that you mentioned before?
Al Jolson,
you know, and he's a very nice fellow. And I remember sitting there one day and talking with him, and he says, "You know, Don," he says, "they." Got a wire, and they want my permission to work up on a story, a picture of my life. And he said, "I think I'll let them do it." And I thought it was, paid no attention to it until after the picture did come out.
It came out. Mm-hmm.
And you know that, if you ever saw the picture, you see the scene, there was a scene in it where he was entertaining the men, and he... They were applauding so much, and finally he took off his coat and says, "All right, if you want it, I'll stay as long as you want me to stay." And that's just what he did in Anchorage when he entertained. And I met quite a few of the gals. The nicest performer that I met of all of them was Ingrid Bergman.
And was she traveling this?
She made a tour up there, too. Mm-hmm. But she was... There were some of those girls that just went up there, and they knew their boyfriends were up. Some popular actress, picture was in the paper last week. I don't know, I forget her name. But we all knew that she was making this tour just to see a boyfriend who was down out in the Aleutians. Mm-hmm. But for a lady, for being a perfect lady and being charming, Ingrid Bergman, you gets every one of my votes.
Yeah.
Because you see, the other ones, well, like Hope was telling me, I get 21,000 a week. And he said, Don, I can go to Colgate's. He was with Pepston. He said, I can go to Colgate's tomorrow and get 23,000 a week. But see, a lot of those people had radio contracts.
Yes.
And they still got paid while up there, so there was no sacrifice.
Yeah.
Now the USO kids, I think all they got was the expenses paid. Maybe some of them might have gotten a couple of bucks. But the big stars, they were on contract.
They were on contracts.
So they got paid up, and then all this stuff about the sacrifices they were making. Fooey. Ate with the generals and had the best of everything and still enjoying the contract money that they had.
But, where did your duties during the war? Did it take you to the Aleutians or take you out of Alaska at all? Or?
No. I was with this tour for a while, for about, I don't know, 3 or 4 months. Met Joey Brown and... I don't know.
Did you travel out in other...
All through the Army areas.
Outside of Alaska, too?
No, in Alaska, yeah. But I remember the time... my captain in the Marine Corps was... Madman Smith, they called him. Yeah, I think it's General Madman Smith. Something like that. I don't know if that's exact wording. But anyway, down when I was commanding officer down in that island, commanding general of the West Coast was making a trip, and he came up with General Smith. And we were sitting around having a cup of coffee, and I was talking to him, and I said, weren't you Captain Smith of the 8th Machine Gun Battalion? And he says, yes. And he looked at me, and he says, you're the fella that had the mustache that used to play for me. What in the hell are you doing in the goddamn Army? And because I had been in the Marine Corps.
Yeah.
What in the hell are you doing in the goddamn... He remembered me. I used to have a mustache that I used to play for him. See, every time in the Army of Occupation, when he'd go to one of the castles or anything like that, any big doing, I'd get Adler. See?
So and Adler would go play.
Yeah, so... But remember, mind you, meeting him after... All those years, and my daughter still has a little notation, says he wrote, I had to travel all across the country, all half across the world to catch up with something.
Well, that was quite a reunion.
Yeah, and he was my company commander back in World War I.
Mm-hmm.
As I say, for nice people, Joey Brown was nice, Bob was nice, but Ingrid Bergman...
She took the cake.
She was, you know, General Buckner gave her the use of his yacht so she could go around and visit some of these different posts, you know, and she came down to our post there, and she had some of the girls with her. And, everybody was drinking, and everybody got a little noisy, but she was the hostess and charming and so... Sober and lovely.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't make a difference if you were a major or who you are. Of course, the sad part of it is that I couldn't permit the enlisted men to come in. You know, that's the law of the Army. You can't have a party and have the enlisted men and generals and...
I see. Was where did you meet her? At Annette or...?
Annette Allen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And as I say, she was... She did a little show there with somebody and... But she was beautiful, she was charming, she was lovely, she was everything.
Well, did you spend the entire time that you were in the National Guard at Annette, or did you move, were you assigned other locations in Alaska?
Then I went to, at the Aleutians at Attu. Mm-hmm. Not Attu, but Umnak. I was, I was just over there and... the Aleutians were overrated as being dangerous, as being bad country. It's the same thing as Alaska is overrated for the sake of the tourists, to make them think it's a wild country. The beauty of this whole country lies in the wilderness. And it isn't so rough. How often do you get 60 below?
Not very often.
Not often.
Not very often.
This country isn't...
Oh, I don't agree. Pretty winter, in the winter it can be pretty.
Pardon?
You've forgotten what the winters are like.
Well, they were bad. Sure, I'll grant you that, but...
Now, he was saying it's overrated. Some of these things are overemphasized.
Overemphasized, yeah.
For tourism point of view.
That's all.
When you're young, you don't mind fucking the elements. But
no. No, I never will forget the year that the one couple of months there or so, we had 60 below every day, and then about 3 days before the end of the month, it dropped to 55. And then next morning, shot back to 60. And the Weather Bureau man was so mad. Because he says if that would have held up another 2 or 3 days, we'd have had a world's record. He wasn't interested in us freezing to death.
Yeah.
He was interested in the temperature record. Yeah, we were all ready to murder him.
Well, here in Fairbanks, where did you live in one place most of the time, or did you live in several different locations?
We lived in about 3 different places.
Mm-hmm. It breaks my heart to the place over in Garden Island. Got a nice home there right opposite, it's a gas, they tore it down last year and put up a gas station.
Oh, yeah. Right there on the corner of Mini Street.
Yeah.
Mini Street.
I don't know. It's on the same street that the coal bunkers are, you know, along that
yes.
street there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there weren't any houses over in that area when we were there.
No.
Effie houses.
But we had four, the Effie
company. Well, there was a house, was it on the corner?
No, it wasn't on the corner. There were three. There's one on the corner, used to own by Frank Mapleton.
No, that wasn't on the corner. It was, who was it on the corner there?
Well, where that service station has been built now, there were two houses, and they were both moved. They weren't demolished.
Well,
they were just moved.
That's it. And the one on the one that used to be on the right was ours.
Frank Norris was on the end.
Ralph Norris was on one side. And our house was the other one.
Then the next one, the owner of it now, and the man who moved it, was Jim Messer.
Yes.
And he, that's the house that Cecil Wells used to occupy.
Yeah, we sold it to him.
So that's, I see.
Well, Cecil Wells is the one that was torn down?
No, it was moved.
It was moved. Well, that's
in Slaterville, and it's just about 2 blocks back.
Well, that was our home. Yeah, Cecil Wells bought it from us.
Now, Jim Messer is the... co-owner of Aurora Motors here with Jim Dodson. Not Jim Dodson, but Les Dodson.
Oh.
Aurora Motors has the General Motors products here in Fairbanks.
Uh-huh.
The Cadillac and Pontiac and Buick. Not Buick, but I don't know what all they said.
But they moved it back.
They just moved the entire house, and it's back about 2 blocks east of where it was. It was on Mini Street, now it's back on, I think it's on Wells Street. But Jim Messer at Aurora Motors is the owner of that now. And I know Cecil Wells used to live in that house.
Yeah.
And the messers bought it, I think, from the Wells estate, or maybe bought it from Cecil before he died. I'm not sure.
I think they bought it from the estate.
The house was not demolished, just
yeah. I'd like to go in there sometime. Just
I knew it wasn't demolished.
But you're going to the Petroleum Club for lunch today, mm-hmm. and Aurora Motors is right across the street. You'll look down on it when...
Oh.
It's right on First Avenue and Lacey Street. First and Lacey.
Mm.
He and Les Dodson, I'm not sure if you know...
Les Dodson, no.
But they work... Both of them work for Cecil Wells. At that agency, and then they took it over as partners.
Yeah, that was
And Mr. Messer has taken very good care of that house.
Oh, it was a lovely place.
Yeah, yes. Old-fashioned now. Oh, compared to the new houses up here.
But he just moved it to the yard. He doesn't have many big trees around it, but he's done a very nice job with the yard. It looks really nice.
Yeah, we love that. We had a big, nice big music room in there and a big grand piano.
Mrs. Mary Adler would know where it is because
she knows.
Magdalene Cassidy's house, somewhere down in there. I think it's on Will Street.
Well, we get the car, we'll drive over and take a look at it.
It's not white. It used to be white, but it's not white now.
Oh,
it's kind of a cream color.
Oh. Yeah, that's right. It was white.
Yeah, it's a beautiful house. I admired it.
Yeah, we lived there quite a while.
How many children do you have?
One.
Just one. Your one son.
Mm-hmm.
Your father.
No, we have.
No, he's the grandson.
I mean, yeah, his father.
Yeah, his father.
No, mother.
Yeah. His mother.
Mother, yeah.
His father's coming up tomorrow morning.
Oh, I see.
We have one daughter.
Yeah. That's what I mean. That's what I meant to say anyway.
You have one daughter.
Yeah.
And her name is, what's her name?
Joanne.
Tollefson.
Now that's Joanne Tollefson.
Tollefson? T-O-L-L?
E-F-S-O-N. Two L's, one F.
And Ted here is your grandson.
The oldest.
The oldest grandson.
Yeah, he's the old man. He wants to climb Mount Everest.
He wants to?
I think he does.
Well, I don't think he's going to do that anymore.
He can ski down.
He mountain climbs and skis.
Well, he loves, he likes...
I think you've had enough of that, Dan.
I wanted to ask him, just a few of the people he met at the mug up the other night you haven't seen for a long time. Can you recall just a few of the names of the people?
Oh, the herrings and the...
Yeah, the hoagies, the herrings.
Oh, so many.
And Jack Link.
Yeah.
Jack Link, of course. Yeah. He lived right near you.
Oh, yeah. So we had when we had that house, in the back there, back of us, Joe Corson, the flyer, used to live. And we built a... in the back of our yard, we built a swimming pool. And all the kids within blocks, they learned how to swim in that swimming pool. And that water was so cold, we built a hot water tank and tried to keep warm water going in there. But you see, we made the stupid mistake of digging a hole and making the pool instead of putting the pool above the ground, away from the permafrost, so the heat of the sun could have, but here we have it in the forest.
Yeah, I see.
But the kids all from blocks used to come around there. That,
well, just in the area.
The neighbor, in that neighborhood, they'd come around there, their tires and learn how to swim.
Yeah. Well, Earl Beislein, then, you knew him, he served under you during World War II in the National Guard.
Yeah, but he... Well, Earl and I have been friends before that, you know. He's a very fine fellow.
Were you ever active in the Pioneers here? Did you have an office in the...
No, I never joined the Pioneers. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just never got around to it. I was head of the Legion of Alaska, And I was head of the 48th of Alaska. And but I just didn't join.
This should have initiated you at the mug up that night.
Well, you have to be 30. You have to have lived in the country 30 years, don't you?
Well, you qualify. Well. Some of them come up and spend 6 months back and.
Yeah.
25 or something, and then come back from.
Yeah.
And, you should be a pioneer. Anybody who walked from Chittenden to Fairbanks should walk the pioneers.
Or spit in the Yukon.
Did you ever know the Queen Regent before? She led kind of a quiet life here in Fairbanks. She worked at the Northern Hotel for Margaret.
Yes.
Offset it is now. It was Margaret Berge who ran the Northern Hotel.
Northern Hotel. The Northern Hotel, was that the one near the...
Near the Pioneer. It burned. And I don't know when it burned. She's one of those quiet Alaskans who's gone about her own...
Berge, the name... The name rings a bell, but...
She married Oscar Phipps in 1952.
Oscar Phipps, I remember.
Yeah, you probably remember Oscar, because he helped build FE power plant, and then he worked in it. He was their chief engineer for years and years and years.
Yeah, Oscar Phipps, I remember him.
And they were married in 1952. She'd known him for many, many years. But,
I think you should get Mary on there a little bit.
I'm going to invite Mary in.
Mary?
Yes?
Come on in here. Yeah, Mary and Dave had the bookshop, you know.
Oh, I know, of course. And Dave Adler was very, very active in American Legion. I remember him telling me one time that, it was the Elks. He was the secretary of the Elks for something like
25 years. 25 years, yeah.
Unbelievably long time.
They gave him some kind of a... Ward life membership.
He was head of the American Legion.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't he also head of the American Legion for the state of Alaska?
Mm-hmm.
Local. Mm-hmm. And did you head the?
She'll be here in a minute.
Did you hold a state office in the American Legion?
Yeah, I was department commander. And then we have a branch of the Legion. It's called the 48th. And I was head of that of Alaska.
On this visit, have you seen any of your former American Legion officers?
No, they, who's the one that asked me to come to the meeting tonight?
Oh, that would be great if you could go to a meeting.
Fellow with the yellow, he had a mustache.
Someone invited Mr. Adler to the American Legion tonight.
Oh, Russell Huber.
Russell Huber.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Charles R. Huber. He's a, you know, Huber.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, there's an installation, I think, tonight, installation of officers tonight. And Russell mentioned it to me. And I said I would tell you, but I forgot all about it.
Hey. Wanted to go down and I think that meeting tonight at 7:30.
Yeah, I think it's 7:30, yeah, we can find out.
Would you like to sit here?
Why don't you have a seat for a minute, Mary?
Feet are kind of wet and all, but...
You've been out in the garden. The
weeds are getting ahead, and
was that rhubarb you were cutting
that,
in the
but
kitchen?
Mrs. Hagman brought that down. She was cutting up rhubarb. She keeps me supplied with rhubarb.
It's better than rhubarb we can raise.
Well, it's... very good, I think. Rhubarb here, you know, you can eat it all summer. It seemed like when I was used to, rhubarb was good in the spring, and then it got too tough or something,
mm-hmm.
Woody. But this is good. They pull it out just about as fast as it comes, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've been spending the winters outside
Yes.
lately. Do you go to Redmond and spend part of the time with... But your home, the Don Adlers now are in, your home now, permanent home is in Redmond.
Redmond.
Washington. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just out of Seattle.
We were talking about the American Legion and the Elks. Your husband, Dave Adler, was active in both of them.
And yes, he had been.
He was an Elk.
He had been secretary to the Elks for many years. I can't tell you how long he could have.
From the beginning.
From the beginning. He was one of the first. Well, he was one of the first officers. E.B. Collins was the first, what do they call them? Was he called him president of the
Grand Exalted Ruler?
Oh, the Grand Exalted Ruler is a state or national officer, isn't he? But the local head was the Exalted Ruler, and Dave was a secretary. And Dave was secretary until, I don't know when.
About 25 years.
He was at least 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
I think longer, and of course Mr. Collins, died here in 67 after he came back from Sitka. Just when they opened the new home, he and Mrs. Collins came back from Sitka, and I think he died that fall.
Shortly after.
After the flood.
After the flood.
Yeah, he died mm-hmm. shortly after the flood. And I think probably Dave might have been the last of the charter members. He was the last of the charter members here. Now there might be some that have gone somewhere else. And you might ask Frank Nash, if you get hold of him, whether he was a charter member or not.
I talked to Mr. Nash last night, and he told me that he was very active in the Elks and very active in the American Legion. And he said, I remember one time going into Dave Adler's bookstore. They were both so involved in both organizations. He said, Mr. Adler just threw up his hands, and he says, what is it now? But he said that they were both very, very involved, you know, in the American Legion and in the Elks.
Took too much time.
I was fortunate Mr. Nash took the time last night to let me bother him, because he left this morning to drive down the new highway.
Oh, he did. He left this morning.
Someone suggested yesterday that might make a good name for that new highway. You know, we have a problem between Anchorage and Fairbanks. The people in Anchorage want to call it the Anchorage-Fairbanks Highway, and we want to call it the Fairbanks-Anchorage Highway.
Oh.
Someone yesterday suggested that it should be named the Nash Highway.
Well, he was with the Road Commission for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the man who has not received the credit that he should was Old Man McDonald.
Donald McDonald,
the father of the Alaska Highway.
Alaska Highway. Yeah. We used to mm-hmm. think he was nuts,
but he really had a vision.
Because he was the one who was talking about building a highway
from the United States to Alaska.
To Alaska. And everybody thought, well, all McDonald
never
he's
be
just
done.
Nuts.
Uh-huh. I wonder if Colin is here now. I haven't seen him.
No, Colin was out of town. He was going to play at the Mug Up.
He was.
Saturday night.
But his father.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And Flora Sobel's father.
Yeah. That, you know, you're right, Mr. Adler.
Frank Nash did a lot.
He was more of an employee, and McDonald was a surveyor type.
Yeah, he was an
engineer.
Type.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he was.
And he was a planner. And
a planner, yes, and an engineer.
And a man with a vision.
And he was one
I think Frank Nash just worked for.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was one that had the original idea.
Yes, he was.
And Mr. Nash said that when the Army built the highway, the Alaska Highway, they followed almost exactly the proposed route that Donald McDonald had laid out on maps.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And you never hear his name mentioned with any of the highways.
No.
Unless a group like here.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's a good thought. Maybe I should
talk to two or three people.
Earl Beislein.
And Colin, see what Colin can tell you. And mm-hmm. Donald McDonald, Colin's older brother, would know more, too, because he's in
He is a highway engineer.
Castro engineer, too. But he's out in, I think, Montana somewhere.
Well, he should get credit. I have never heard his... I haven't heard his name mentioned at all.
They paid a little tribute to him last Sunday, a week ago yesterday, at Nenana, when they had the 50th anniversary of the driving of the Golden Spike, to commemorate President Harding's completion. You know, they drove the last spike. The president or the manager of the Alaska Railroad is Mr. Walker Johnson, and he mentioned at that ceremony that Donald MacDonald had designed that railroad bridge where they held the ceremony.
Is that right?
And Flora was there.
Flora was there.
She was there. Uh-huh. And she was one of the guests who was introduced.
Well, that's fine.
But that was just in passing. What we're talking about is something in memoriam, you know, memorial.
I was in Cordova when word got there that Harding died.
When did you leave Fairbanks? When you retired, when you left the Lathrop Company, or what?
Well, let's see.
47.
We were called in service, and we went down there and got back in 46. No, we were out of service 46, and then the old man asked me to come back, and we came back for about a year, but family didn't like it anymore, so. Besides, my daughter had a boyfriend. So.
His dad.
So then you left in 47, and...
Yeah.
And did you go to the Seattle area, or...?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What did you do in Seattle?
Well, I did teach and play.
You're no longer with the Lathrop Company time.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, are you just retired, or do you do anything?
Well, teach.
You still teach?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I still get a big kick out of teaching.
Do you still play piano in any cabarets?
No, I...
like you did in Cordova?
No. But that cabaret in Cordova... Oh, we'll forget that.
Cordova is where my husband started out. Only he wasn't born there. He was born in 1913, and there was no hospital, no nurse, no doctor.
No.
So his mother went to Seattle, and he was born there, and then he returned to Cordova when he was 2 weeks old. So
I can remember Cordova when they were hauling it from the Kennecott Copper Mine. They used to haul in the sacks of ore. And to Cordova to be put on the boats.
To be taken out
of the smelter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's
one town I've landed at the airstrip, but I've never been in Cordova. And I'm going down, I think, this next month.
Of course, there isn't really much to the town. It's a nice town. I wouldn't call Cordova an exciting town. Not by any means.
You would not?
No, not exciting.
The blue of the sea, the evening sky, the mountain lakes and the flowers nearby.